Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency faster. And I'm delighted to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers in the insurance industry, and to discern and deconstruct what they do to help you grow your agency faster. I'm thrilled to introduce you to this podcast with not one guest, but two. This is my first, I think, three-way conversation assisted by terrific technology with two people, two high-ranking executives from the Keystone Insurance Group. Keystone, one of the great networks in our industry. For those of you who perhaps missed my conversation with Neil Stanley, the industry's expert on networks, you probably should go back and check that one out. But in any case, listen to this one first. Josh is vice president of Keystone Organic Growth, a division of the Keystone Insurers Group. Prior to that, he was at Marsh Berry. He is also has also earned the Purple Heart from his service in Iraq. And George Wynn is executive vice president of corporate development at Keystone and been in the industry a long, long time. Was with Erie Insurance, senior VP of Erie Insurance a while back, and on. And as you will see from the conversation, a seasoned industry veteran. So we talk about some really interesting things. Among them, of course, they have a great view on the industry being involved in Keystone. Keystone, for those of you not aware of it, if I'm getting my numbers right, 108 employees. So this is a significant, among networks, this is a significant organization. 270 partner agencies and, of course, doing $1 billion a year. One of the things that we talk about, based on their observations of these very interesting times in the industry, is how they see three different kinds of agencies. And I think, hopefully, you will very quickly be able to identify which one of those three you are, and hopefully it's in the good group. And I'll leave that part of the conversation for later. In any case, not going to give away much more. I think this is a fascinating conversation about and from people who know the industry really well, people who work with lots of very successful agencies. I've had lots of clients from Keystone. They all speak well about the organization itself. Secondly, they've all been just flat out premier agencies to begin with, even before they came to me. And so I hold the organization and its partner agencies in very high regard. So I'm going to let them speak for themselves. Before I do that, a couple of real quick things. Number one, I want to know what you want. As I've said before, this is really not my podcast. This is your podcast. I'm just the guy who's supposed to kind of be the middleman between who you want to hear from and your ear and your brain. So I can't read your mind, so I want to know who you want to hear from. Do me a favor. Tell me. And actually, it makes my job easier. You know that at the introduction, I always say it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers. I guess it's really my job, and I'm looking for help. And so if you will be kind enough to just think about, answer this question. If Michael could interview anybody that you wanted to, a conversation that you wanted to eavesdrop in on or be a part of, who would that be? Ideally in the industry, but there are also some, I've done some outside the industry specialists that I think have delivered great value. So give me names, post a comment on the Agency Revolution Podcast website or email me, michael@agencyrevolution.com. Tell me what you want. And the final thing I want to pass on to you, I know that all the listeners of this podcast are serious students of the industry. Otherwise, why listen? I wanted to pass on, if you've missed this before, I'm the co-author of a new book, bestseller on Amazon, and it's important for the industry. I wrote it with a lot of other contributors, and full disclosure, none of us make any money off of this. We all entered into that agreement so that the resources could really go towards the production of an excellent guidebook on what's happening in the industry right now. The book is called The InsurTech Book. Very important topic. We all should be aware of it. Again, no royalties, no commissions for yours truly, but I will encourage you to hop on Amazon. You can get it there or Google The InsurTech Book and be the first agent on your block to read it. All righty. Now, without further ado, it is my privilege to introduce you to George Wynn and Josh Morgan. All right. So this time I've got two guests, and I'm going to try to keep this organized so that it doesn't turn into a circus affair. Josh Morgan and George Wynn, both from the same organization, Keystone, one of the highly respected, some people call them clusters, but we're not going to do that. But you are a network of agencies. So first of all, thanks to both of you for joining us.
Certainly.
Okay. And secondly, we'll take these one at a time. I'll ask you to introduce yourself. George, you've been in the space for a while. Tell us what you do there at Keystone and what your job is.
My actual title is the Executive Vice President of Corporate Development.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, Keystone has, approximately 15 divisions. Okay. And a lot of those divisions work with me to provide the value-added services that we believe Keystone gives to our partner agents.
And before this call is over, we're going to dig into what some of those value-added services are. So,
fine.
So hang with us to the end of the podcast, George. All right. And,
okay.
And Josh, you've also been in the space for a while. What's your job?
Yeah, so I work under George. I'm within one of those divisions called the Organic Growth Division, and my title is Vice President, and I work with agencies on all topics around organic growth. I speak on the topic. I advise our partners. I do producer recruitment, onboarding, compensation plan development, training guides, the whole bit, but it largely focuses around producer development.
Got it. Well, organic growth is something that gets my juices going, and I think it gets our audience's juices going, so we're going to be digging into some of that stuff as well. You were in the industry before you joined Keystone. You were with Marsh Berry?
That's right.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. And George, you've had a long career in the industry. I think you said you were with Carriers.
Yes, I started in the business before the earth cold, and started with a company out of Pennsylvania, Erie Insurance. I was the senior vice president with Erie Insurance Erie's home office.
Uh-huh.
And then I left there in 1995 and started my own insurance company. I didn't raise the capital. I was given the capital by W.R. Berkley Corporation out of Greenwich, Connecticut. And then we created our own property casualty company. And then it was in 2005, quite honestly, I thought about hanging up my spikes and doing something else. But then Keystone was my largest agency when I had my company.
Ah.
And when I had my company, I did $21 million worth of business with Keystone.
Uh-huh.
So I was very familiar with them, and they approached me about coming to work for Keystone,
okay,
which I did.
Okay, so while we're on the topic, give us the thumbnail for our listeners who don't know Keystone, or maybe those who have heard of Keystone and might have some misunderstanding of what it actually is. Real quick, what's Keystone?
Okay. Well, and you said we Actually, we are. We don't like to admit it because it's a very small portion of what we do, but we are a network of independent agencies. We have 108 employees that work 24 hours a day for our Keystone partners. We have 270-some partners throughout our 12 states that we do business in. The average size of our agency would be probably, I think there's some misconceptions, but the average size is probably between $3 and $10 million in revenue.
Uh-huh. Okay. You said 108 employees. Did I hear that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
108 actual employees of the Keystone mothership.
Had somebody asked me prior to you saying that, I would have had no idea that the network was that large. So...
Right.
Congratulations. So, and I know Keystone's reputation, and I've had plenty of Keystone agencies as clients of mine. So my observation is not only is Keystone a pretty strong organization, but you've got some premier agencies in your network. So I guess enough of my obsequiousness, but I really do mean that. So I'm going to dive into some of the insights, observations about the industry in general, because both of you have so much experience working with agencies. You and I we've all talked before, the three of us, and one of the insights that one of you shared I thought was really interesting, and it parallels a lot of other conversations that I've had with other guests, and that is that you kind of divide the agency force into three categories. Am I right about that?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
I always say...
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, George, tell us about those three categories of agencies.
Well, I'm not sure where I got this from, but I didn't make it up myself, but I call them road agents. Okay,
mm-hmm.
R-O-A-D. And they are agents that I say are retired on active duty.
Oh, R-O-A-D. It's an acronym. Okay, right. I got it. All right.
Okay.
So they're not spending much time on the road. They're actually retired on active duty. Okay. And so...
Exactly.
Yeah, so before we go through all three of these, I'm going to dig into each one. Who are they? What are their characteristics? Are they doing okay? What's their long-term future?
I think their long-term future is very, very limited.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of sitting there, sitting on the business that they have had over the years. They're not growing their business. And quite honestly, that business is just kind of gone away.
And
so that's why I say
they're
retired. And sooner or later, quite honestly, it's a very... big disservice to our industry, because as opposed to selling the agency or perpetuating the agency, some of these people just allow the business to go away because they believe they can make more money by not even servicing the business than they could if they sold it.
Got it. Okay, so they're living off the tail.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have to answer this question, but my presumption is you don't have a lot of those agencies in the Keystone group.
No.
Got
no.
it. All right. But they're out there.
The only way
the
only way we might get one of those would be if one of our partners comes to us and says, I want to buy this agency down the street from me in a couple years. How about if we consider bringing them into Keystone so that when I have an opportunity to buy them, they're already part of Keystone.
Got it. Okay. Got it. All right. So then we've got the second category of agencies. I think you call them the already rich.
Exactly. They're agencies that have been very, very, and we have some of those, okay? I'd be the first one to admit
fair enough.
That.
Well, I think discover is there are a lot of them in the industry right now.
Okay? Exactly. And they've done very well. They could be a second, third generation agency. They could be a scratch agency that was just successful by doing the things that good agents do, but now they're just kind of sitting there in the typical thing you would hear from them. And this, I mean, I think what we're going to talk about is how rapidly this business that we're in is changing.
Right.
And these are the people that have made money, they got a lot of money, they don't really care about losing the account, And they're always saying, I wish it could be the way it used to be.
I think you'll agree with me on this. I don't think wishing is going to make it happen.
No, I agree with you.
All right. So now it seems to me that those two groups, the road agent and the already rich, that they have some similarities in terms of, maybe sort of the lack of contemporary ambition, not embracing the change, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. And so the long-term future for both is that they're probably not going to be a long-term force in the industry. The road agent, it's going to wither away. The already rich, I presumably that's a professionally run organization, and somebody's going to knock on their door and they're going to sell.
Yeah, or we have to convince those people before it's too late to start a perpetuation program.
Okay, got it. All right. So then
you have some of these agencies that are very, very successful, and they made a lot of money, but they did not have a perpetuation plan. Mm-hmm. So now it takes more than one producer or more than one person to buy the agency, okay? And so people have to plan down the road, like, if I'm going to be a very successful agent, it's going to take a lot of money to buy me out. So I better be figuring out how I'm going to do that right now.
Okay. And most likely they're not going to see an internal perpetuation. It's going to be external.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So then we have category number three. I'm not sure what you call these guys.
I call them pedal to the metal.
Okay.
They're embracing everything that's going on. They're adapting to change. They're in the digital world. They're in the analog world. They're doing just everything, and they are students of the business, and they take every opportunity to be, to be intentional. They're proactive. They're always doing things or trying things which they believe are going to make their agency grow.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to make a generalization here. Do you see more? So with category one, category number two, let me test a presumption. They're mostly baby boomers.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Category three, let me make another presumption that there are a lot of millennials or Gen Xers that are in that group, and there are baby boomers who perhaps have a second generation that are in that group, and that there are probably some baby boomers who just are perpetual entrepreneurs and are willing to embrace technology and other things like that, that are in that group.
So yes, okay. I agree with that 100%.
All right. But the first two groups, boomers, and the second group, do you see... Because, frankly, I had another podcast interview this morning with a super successful agent. He's not in your area. He's not a Keystone agent, but he's very, very successful. Clearly a baby boomer. But he embraces the technologies like he was 26 years old. Now, he may not execute on those himself, but he's got somebody on his team that can handle that.
I read an article. It's interesting that you bring that up, because I read an article the other day that said essentially the same thing, that some of the boomers spend more time on the internet and with social media than the millennials.
Now, the latest research that I did demonstrate that boomers do spend more time online than millennials do. The distribution between devices might be slightly different, but as a whole, yeah. And, there are those of us who are baby boomers who just dig technology. And I have a feeling that whether it takes courage or just ambition or interest, those people that are in your category three have an active relationship with technology. Okay.
Definitely.
All right. So I don't think we need to talk about category one and category two a lot, because I don't think that they're the future of the industry, right? Category three, let's talk about them. First question is, What do you see as the differences in behaviors of the agency owner if they fit into that pedal to the metal category?
Josh, you want to take a stab at that one?
All right, Josh.
With a lot of the principles and what you look for when recruiting agents, producers.
Yeah, so from an owner perspective, number one, most agencies significantly underestimate the amount of producer hires that are necessary to hit their own growth goals. Putting aside perpetuation needs, if an agency needs to perpetuate out one owner, in most cases they need to hire or have two perpetuation candidates. Given, certain hiring success metrics, if 50% of your producers don't make it, that means that you actually have to hire four producers to have two perpetuation candidates. Mm-hmm. So the agencies that are doing it right know that and understand that and are hiring at a much quicker velocity than those that are not. And they're building systems that allow them to do so. For instance, one of the recommendations that I have for agencies that I work with is that they have an offer letter ready to go. When they have a producer candidate that they've identified that has all the makings of someone, great, that they have an offer letter that is ready to go so that there's no time wasted between whether they've made the hiring decision and they put forth the offer. Because if it is truly a great candidate in today's tight hiring market, more than likely they have other options. And those other options may be more swift with their hiring methods. And so the top-performing agencies are figuring out these systems to hire more effectively, hire smarter, and hire more swiftly than those who are not. And also hiring more often, too, just because they need to grow organically and they need to perpetuate their agencies. It's out of necessity that they are hiring, but by the same token, all of these tactics are improving their agency value. So in many cases, the same practices that you employ to perpetuate your agency, you're increasing your agency value if you did choose to call it sell externally.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So the choice is the same for either outcome. Now, it's arguable which is better for the agency owner, how much more financial benefit there is in one direction or another, but the tactics are largely the same.
Okay, so I want to zero in on something that you had said, and that is that agencies who are in this Category 3, pedal to the metal, they're hiring more, generally, you say they're hiring more producers, right? And
that's accurate, yep.
Yeah, and that they generally have some systems in place to make that happen. So I got a couple of questions. Number one, when you're talking about production and hiring producers, are you specifically talking about commercial lines over personal lines?
Yes, employee benefits, commercial lines. That's where I focus.
So that's your area of focus. Okay. And then, a really interesting concept here. One of my mentors, Dan Kennedy, used to say that the most dangerous number in business is one. And so the agency principal who has one producer, very dangerous because he's vulnerable. But even, it would seem, based on your methodology, the agency principal who hires one at a time, in other words, does not do it systematically, is in a little bit of a dangerous position. That, in other words, it's the real business system, the real business strategy is to build a system that attracts and recruits and then trains and manages producers, not just having your one or two good producers.
That's absolutely accurate. You should have a job description that's ready to go. You should already know what interview questions you're going to ask. You should already have a job offer that's already created. You should already have an onboarding system that's put together before you know, you actually make the hire. So, you know, the fact that you have all these things done ahead of time just allows, you know, to put the process into play. And if something's not working in the process, you just make an adjustment into one of those areas. And so the best agencies have those things down pat, and that's what allows them to hire more often and also identify talent when they see it. They don't have to wait. They don't have to mull about it. They don't. The hiring decision is actually easier when you know what you're looking for.
Got it. All right. So that's item number one is producer recruitment, producer management. What other behaviors do you see your most successful pedal to the metal agency owners? What behaviors do they execute? What makes them?
They run.
Yeah.
They run their business as a business. It just happens to be they're in the insurance business.
Yeah. Okay.
But they treat it. They run it as a business. And the most successful, without a question, plan. Okay, so they know where they want to be. Not just this year, but they know where they want their agency to be 5 years from now.
Okay, got it. So I'm breaking that down into two chunks there. Running the business is a business. So let me give you an example. Again, I'm calling on the interview that I had earlier this morning with a very successful agent. He clearly, he's been around for a while, so he did say, you know, for several years he was selling insurance. But there came a point, he was still a very young man. So now I think he says about 30, 35 years ago. He has not sold a policy personally for 30 or 35 years. And, you know, if we need proof that at least for him this was a successful strategy, he's got the largest single owner agency in his state. So, so when you say this principle of running the business as a business, what does that mean? So let's talk to the agent right now. You know, like he's showing up to work on Monday morning and he's got a whole bunch of stuff and a lot of it's insurance stuff and maybe he's got clients calling, whatever fills his day. What does that mean to run the business as a business?
It means to be, to me, it means to be proactive, to be intentional about what you do. So when you get there on Monday morning, you're not just reacting to people who happen not to be able to get a hold of you over the weekend. So you have other people to do that. So you're active. You're going to spend a portion of your day looking for agencies to buy. You're going to spend a portion of your time looking for new producers. You have a business plan as to how you're going to run your business.
Okay. All right. So that gets to the second part of your earlier comment, that they have a plan. What are the and I can't tell you how thrilled I am to hear you say that, because this is a conversation I've been trying to have with the industry for 25 years. I'm gonna make a wild, you know, sort of unscientific statement here, premise here. Most agencies, if you knocked on the door of the average independent insurance agency in the United States or Canada today, and they trusted you, and you said, you know, can we sit down so I can review your plan? They wouldn't have one. Is that a safe statement to make?
Yeah, I think it's a very safe statement to make.
Okay.
We actually have a division, what we call agency management.
Right.
And it's best practices. And this person is on a retainer with us, and he teaches. He works with agents on business planning.
Oh, so, okay. Got it. So when you say, excuse me, an agency has a plan, what are the elements of the plan?
Well, it would be the same thing that I said before. Mm-hmm. The best thing about planning is, I think, the best thing about planning is that it makes you take a look at where you are today, okay? Mm-hmm. And realize that most agencies, I think, operate that if they get X number of dollars of commission income during a month and their expenses are less than the commission income, then they've had a very successful month. But that's not running a business.
Right.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
And so you got to think about the investments you're going to make in automation, the investments in social media. The most successful agents today have marketers.
Okay.
Full-time.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you just got me really excited. I interviewed Manny Barbosa from Safeco last week or a couple of weeks ago. And in that conversation, he said that, according to their research, 56% of, and I presume they're their agencies, Safeco agencies, had a marketer. Might not be full-time, but had a marketer. And in 2016, it was 52%. Now, this is a conversation I've been having with the industry for decades. But it seems like somewhere around 2015, 2016, we hit a tipping point and more, at least of the professionally run agencies, had marketers than those that didn't. Does that sound right?
Yes, I would agree with that 100%.
Well, that's a radical shift because, I mean, traditionally, any marketing that was done, well, back in the old days, it was, you know, the agency principal sat down with the Yellow Pages rep, and the Yellow Pages rep said, let me design an ad for you. Of course, that wasn't their area of expertise. Their job was to sell an ad. And then if commercial lines producers wanted leads, they had to go get leads themselves and knock on doors like Fuller Brush salespeople. And if they wanted personal lines leads, well, then, you know, the approach was to eagerly wait for the phone to ring. And so now we're actually seeing more agencies have somebody on the team whose responsibility it is to communicate with the marketplace and to draw that marketplace in a trusting way into the agency. So thrilled to hear you say that. Now, when you look at that term marketer, what are the, at least in your observation, what are some of the responsibilities of that person?
Well, Josh, you chime in here. I know that Safeco does have a wonderful program, and I think it's, I think their marketing program is, I believe, like is almost a year long, where they'll work with the marketing people. So I think, I guess what we see today, okay, is the most successful agencies are also niche agencies. They develop an expertise in a certain line of business or several lines of business, and they're, as I say, they're proactive. They're going after the business where they have that expertise. If you're in, if you're a reactive agent, okay, you do not do not have relationships, okay.
Right.
You're there waiting for the phone to ring. The phone rings, okay, and then you do what we call the quote hope and hope game. You quote the business, you hope you got the best price, and you hope that the person that wrote the business before you got there did it the right way, because all you're doing is copying what he or she did.
Yeah, right on.
Okay.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I.
We're critical of the business, and we talk about the direct writers, okay, and the guy goes and of the world,
right,
and what we have allowed to happen is we have turned our business into a commodity business. Okay, if we're not proactive about going and developing relationships, then the only thing we have to do is react when somebody calls, and the only thing you can do is hope that you get the cheapest price, because that's where they're going to go.
Right.
Or in most cases, like 20% of the agents write 80% of the business that's out there. Okay.
Right.
And so the 80%, okay, that are still out there, okay, all they're doing is quoting against all the other people that are the 80% of the other quoters. So it's just it's almost a death spiral unless you.
Okay.
It used to be that you could, and I'm not saying being critical, and in some places this is still possible, but it used to be that you had an office on the courthouse square, you sponsored a little league team, you belonged to the Kiwanis and the Rotary, and the business came to you.
That was marketing. Well, that was marketing back in 1985, right? Maybe 1995.
Right.
Okay. All right.
And but that doesn't work today.
It doesn't work today. So I wanted to throw out a question, and either of you could take this one. Because you talked about, you know, the price, selling on price, selling a commodity. So in other words, in the absence of any other distinguishing feature, price is the only thing that matters, and insurance becomes a commodity. Now, you've got agents in Keystone and agents you've probably observed all over the place who don't have to sell on price and who are able to, number one, stand out from the crowd in the marketplace, look different and actually deliver on that difference. And then when they're in a relationship with the client, when they get that relationship with the client, even though price is you know, they might be able to find a cheaper price somewhere else, that agency has created a relationship that engenders genuine loyalty. How do you see successful agents do that so that they don't fall down that commodity trap?
Josh, you want to? We have a person that Josh works with, and he teaches the techniques that the 20% of the agents that write 80% of the business. He teaches the techniques that they use, and it's what we call off cycle. You know, in the old days, we go out and we get a we got an X date, okay, and then 120 days before that X date, we'd go out and copy all the policies and bring them back, and then we go back to them in a couple weeks, and we want them to divorce their current agent and come with us, okay?
Right.
And so we believe in off-cycle selling, okay? The best time to go in is just after the prospect renewed their policy, and then you have an entire year to start to build a relationship with them. And I think sales statistics show that you're probably not going to make a sale until you've had at least 8 to 11 customer experience with that prospect.
Okay.
So it's an ongoing process now, of developing relationships.
Do you see more and more of your agents or the agents that you're observing delivering some of those touches, and they can be meaningful touches and they can be delightful touches, but do you see them delivering more of them in some online fashion, some digital fashion, so they're not having to schlep their way over to the shop 10 times to knock on this guy's door?
Yes, I don't think there's any question about it.
Okay.
And that's got to be your marketing program. And that's why I say niches. Okay, because if you get into a certain niche or several different niches, you can gather information that's going to be beneficial to the people within that niche, as opposed to just shotgunning things out there.
Got it.
And I think Safeco and some of the companies do a very nice job on the personal line side of things by, you know, oh, by the way, it's hurricane season. Oh, by the way, you got to check your pipes to make sure they don't freeze, that
right.
type of thing.
Got it.
So there is information out there that's available to most agencies, but far too few of them take advantage of that.
Okay.
The material is out there.
All right. So in the world we're all living in right now, this is 2018. Clearly, you guys have been around for a while. This is not 1995. It's not 2005. And really, I don't even think it's 2015. I mean, there's been a lot of change in consumer behavior, a lot of change in available technologies, a lot of change in the maturing of the millennial generation. And now we've got about $10 billion of venture capital and other funding, startups and insurtechs, some of which are friendly to the agency force like Agency Revolution, but a lot of which are not friendly. So in this world right now, what do you think an agent needs to do? What do they need to do to thrive, not just get by?
I'll jump in, George.
Josh?
To me, it goes back to the relationship, the personal relationship as the trusted advisor. That is what trumps anything that, these insurtechs that operate entirely through, a chat bot or, a call center or just an online interface. The personal relationship that agents have will always, in my belief, trump over those types of, formats. However, buyers' appetite for purchasing and their purchasing behaviors are going to change, and it's being spread over a larger spectrum. Some people do want to buy insurance through a chatbot, and,
right.
and some people do just want to operate entirely over the phone. And so, agencies have to make the decision, is that business that they want to retain or go after to generate new, or do they want to double down on personal relationships? It's just a decision that they have to make, and I think it's going to differ based upon the geography of where they are located and also the customer type that they see.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going after larger accounts, it's more of a white glove, in-person type of sale. You're building a relationship. It's a long-term sales cycle. If you're buying renter's insurance, maybe Lemonade is an option through one of their chat box or what have you for, $7 a month or whatever it is. That may be business the agency, wants to see go away because they want to focus on larger account sizes. So it's going to be different depending on the agency's strategy and their goals. But at the end of the day, the relationship is going to trump most of what any of these insurtechs can offer. And I think the agency would do well to focus on that.
All right. Let's talk about a little bit about the contribution that you guys and Keystone are making to the industry. I have a little background noise if somebody maybe wants to mute their phone. So Keystone. So correct me if I have any of this wrong. You've got, I think you said about 270 agencies. You're in 11 states. You're about to go into another one, I think Wisconsin. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. And you've got over 500 locations. You're doing over $3 billion of sales. So tell me, what is it about Keystone? It's clearly one of the success stories in the industry. What is it about Keystone that you think has made it such a force?
I think it's because we, as company employees, we do not sit around and dream up things to do. We have, in our newer states, we typically have what we call 4 partner meetings a year. And in the older, more established states, sometimes it's 3 meetings a year. But we listen to what our people say, what they want. I think probably an excellent example is just before the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
Our agents told us they wanted us to get into the benefit business. Okay, and so we went out. And we found one of our partners that 50% of their revenue was benefits and 50% was P&C. And we bought the benefit side of things. Of course, then the Affordable Care Act came, and the economy went down the tubes, and we lost a lot of revenue. But it turned out to be a very, very wonderful thing because that gave us an opportunity to share our expertise as far as the Affordable Care Act and compliance and all those things. So I think it's listening to what our partners want us to do,
mm-hmm.
and then I believe we're very good at executing once we determine what they need. Wow.
Okay. Not too long ago, I had an interview with Neil Stanley, who...
Right.
You obviously... We both know very well. He may be the industry's expert on networks or clusters or whatever we want to call these organizations. First of all, he stunned me with a number, and I can't remember what it is, but it was really big. I think it was over 50%, that over 50% of independent agencies affiliate with some kind of a network. And I thought, wow, that's really changed since the early days when, you know, clusters started to appear on the horizon. And made it very clear that clusters are different than each other. They're not all the same. And so what do you think it is about Keystone that is a differentiator? So in other words, if there's an agency listening and thinking, it's really time I take a look at affiliating with a network organization, what do you think distinguishes Keystone? And I'm not just saying, you know, we're better, but what makes you different? What services do you provide that are different?
Well, I think, and Josh, you pipe in here too, there are a lot of different aggregators or clusters or whatever we want to call them out there, and I think they're all good. They all serve a purpose. I think we're just a little bit different because we're not just a market provider, and there's nothing wrong with market providers because some people need that because it's more difficult to form relationships or to have a significant amount of volume to have any influence on an insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
So there are other things that are important, but I think like we have our benefits division, okay? Which and the reason we do that is we have some agents that are very sophisticated in benefits,
right?
And then we have some that have always shied away from it because they didn't want to ruin their good property casualty clients, okay? And so for those that are sophisticated, we can provide backroom sources for them. For those who are not sophisticated, we have our sales teams in every state in which we do business, and we'll actually go out and write the business for them. And, of course, there is a split in revenue, but we do the same thing on bonds. We do the same thing on, we have a whole division that just focuses on bonding. We have financial services. We have carrier relations people.
Mm-hmm.
We just do a lot of different things that, and once again, I don't say that I know what every group out there does.
Right.
But I think we do many things that an agency, regardless of their size, could not do on their own. And by putting like 270 agents together, now we have resources that we can develop and share those resources with our partner because our prime objective is to help our partners grow the value of their agency by being in Keystone than they could do on their own. So that's the whole, every decision we make, it is to help our agents increase the value of their businesses.
Got it. Okay. Josh, is there anything you want to add to that?
You know, if you're out to perpetuate your business and you want and need all of the same resources as the much larger brokers, the publicly traded, the private equity backed, mm-hmm. and you're seeking a way to do that, join Keystone. I mean, Keystone Partners have nearly all of the same tools at the much larger agency, but yet they're able to operate out of their local footprint and you know, operate without the large corporate culture that many of the larger brokers, you know, might have. And so it presents significant competitive advantage for our Keystone Partners because when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to, you know, the ability to pay their people, you know, effectively, they have numerous advantages that others who do not operate in a similar type of network have. And I think that's a significant point.
If any of our listeners would like to get more information or reach out to you, or if they have a question either about something that you shared on this conversation or about Keystone, first of all, who should they reach out to and how should they do that?
I'm not even sure if I have her number. We have a lady who's vice president of what do we call her, Josh? vice president of state expansion. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Her name is Elizabeth Shank. Okay. And actually, her office number, her cell phone number is 717-580-3162.
Right.
And she, for an agency that would be interested, they could reach out to her. And we have state vice presidents in every state in which we do business, and she would be able to either handle them directly or put them in contact with the state vice president of whatever state they may be in.
All right.
We're doing business there.
And do you know the address or the URL for your website, for Keystone's website?
Yep. It's KeystoneInsGRP.com.
Got it. All right. Josh Morgan and George Wynn, it's been a delightful conversation. I want to thank you both for sharing your time and your insights with us, and a very good possibility I'll see you at a Keystone meeting. I think it's in September in St. Louis, so I look forward to that.
We'd love to see you there.
Indeed. Again, on behalf of our listeners, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.